Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Brutes, where we tell the stories behind your favorite beer. This is Sound Guy Ryan, and joining me, as always, is Matt.
Yeah, Erica isn't here. That's fun fact number one for today's episode.
Okay, what's fun fact number two?
Well, let's elaborate. Erica is at...
Beer and Wine Hobby during the wine season.
Busy season for her. So, she's not going to be here this week, and maybe not next week.
Who knows?
Who knows? But, fun fact number two. I've listened to you do the intro outro for how many episodes at this point?
Too many.
Way too many. And I never noticed that you say, "This is Sound Guy Ryan." I always thought people just knew who you were by your voice.
No.
So that's why you're so famous.
Pay attention to detail, Matt.
That's right. Well, it's been an amazing week for beer.
Yeah, I mean, we were able to go to Sylvaticus Oktoberfest and four-year anniversary, and we keep seeing more and more of those Marzen Fest beers come out.
Yep.
My favorite time of year. It's usually the time of year where I start to gain a little bit of weight.
Yeah, Ryan, you're looking a little thick. Thick with four C's, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, but seriously, I think I'm echoing probably what Erica would think as well. As I'm going to speak for myself, though. Best beer season.
Hands down.
Hands down.
Hands down. The weather's great. You know, you can sit outside or inside. Doesn't matter. Like, it's not too hot. It's not too cold.
Put a flannel on if you're a little cold. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's the best. Yeah. And the beer is just like, oh, it's so good. You can have a couple. You're not going to be sloshed. And it's kind of nice not seeing a million IPAs on the menu.
I know. What a concept.
What a concept. I mean, come on. What's better than pretzel, beer, and then like some smoked meat?
Not much.
Not much. Oktoberfest, man. We have to go. Like, we have to go to Germany.
Oh, we have to go to Germany?
I think, Ryan, I think next year.
That's a lot of work.
I think we could plan it. What do you think?
I can't.
Ryan, we're planning it.
You can plan it.
I'll plan it for you, but you're coming.
Maybe.
All right, maybe.
Okay.
So who do we have this week?
So we got Breakside.
That's right. I'm very excited about this one, where we are notching another state off of our 50 state, 50 breweries. Yeah, and fun fact about this one, we said in the outro, but they have ties to Massachusetts, kind of through like a couple separations of degree, but True North head brewer Seth Barnum actually used to work there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to kind of see that the brewing industry really is small.
Yeah.
You know,
shit.
And I think you could say that with a lot of different industries. Yeah. You know, like I noticed it when I was in school in like the theater industry, even in the professional world, like that.
Do you know so-and-so? And it's like, yeah. Nine times out of ten, you're like, yeah, you almost do. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in your niche, you know, like, you know, the sound people know all the sound people, the lighting people know all the lighting people, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So it's cool. We notched Oregon off of our 50 states, 50 breweries. And don't ask me which number we're on. Erica keeps like a list of all this stuff. And we really couldn't do it without her because she keeps all of this like fun statistic stuff that we usually know. But we just don't know off the top of our head because Erica's like, yeah, that's 16, which 16 sounds right.
It does sound right.
But if we're wrong, we're wrong.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And recently we made a trip out to Rhode Island. So all of our Rhode Island fans can now say thanks for coming to our state.
Yeah, and they can stop bitching that we haven't done it yet.
Oh, Ryan, don't say that. Come on.
I just did.
I know. But yeah, no, it's been awesome. We're very excited to go back to Rhode Island and interview some of the breweries, more of the breweries down there. I know we have Lee Lord's Brewery Narragansett on the list. So
we do.
Lee, I know you're listening. Let's get this happening. But yeah, Ryan, how can our listeners support us to get more awesome episodes?
Go to www.patreon.com/brewrootspodcast.
That's right. You can help us support us by, you know, gas money or, you know,
gear.
Because we always need more gear.
Yeah. But gas money is really nice.
Gas money is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That adds up quick.
Wear and tear in a car. Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to just listen to this episode.
About time.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, Brew Roots listeners, we have a episode full of adventures today.
Indeed.
We have started on the East Coast.
And traveled on the Oregon Trail.
To this brewery. Yeah, we've taken our horse and buggy.
Yep.
Across the country. We passed Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
We decided not to take airplanes for this trip because...
We wanted to do the old-fashioned
way. We wanted to really experience how the West was.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I never want to do that again.
Ever. Dysentery is terrible.
I thought it was lit. Yeah, it was awesome. I knew how to survive because of the game. But we are here with a brewery in Portland, Oregon.
Indeed.
And a lot of people know quite a bit about the Portland, Oregon brewing scene.
And how amazing it is.
It is.
It's known, worldwide maybe? You want to say worldwide?
I would say globally. Globally. And intergalactic.
Definitely intergalactic.
Yeah, yeah. It's like people on Naboo and all the planets in Star Wars know all about it. Yeah, it's
all
crazy.
All Star Wars planets, yep.
Cool. So who are we interviewing today?
We're interviewing Breakside.
Yeah, which is really exciting.
It is.
And as all our listeners know, we are trying to get 50 breweries from 50 states.
Yep.
And
this is another one.
Yeah, and this was listener suggested. So we had a lot of breweries that were like suggested, and fans were, and y'all were one of the breweries that everyone's like, you need to interview them. So either you don't do a lot of, yeah,
you paid those people.
You did. Aww. So we start all of our episodes by asking our guests their first memory of beer and their role at the brewery. So Ben, why don't you take it away?
Yeah. Hey, this is Ben Edmonds. I'm the brewmaster here at Breakside. My first beer memory is probably, I grew up in the Midwest, so I have this kind of fondness for some of the old heritage brands that came out of the upper Midwest. And I remember, I must have been, 17, 18, when I first had Line and Kugels, probably either their Honey Vice or their, maybe the original Red, something like that. So yeah, kind of like somewhere between traditional German lager and American industrial lager. And that was enough flavor to get me hooked.
Mm. Awesome.
In your role, you are the brewmaster, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Excellent. Natalie, what about yourself?
And hey, I'm Natalie. I am part of the R&D team at Breakside, and a couple different beer memories. I remember drinking Dos Equis that my mom had when I was little and not being super into it. And then when I got a little bit older, I babysat for a family who the man in the family, his great-great-grandfather was Adolfo Busch from Anheuser-Busch.
Wow.
I grew up with that, which is just kind of weird. So not what I do now, but yeah, drank Budweiser when I was younger.
But you don't crack open Bud Heavies anymore and just...
I will say, a couple years ago, I had never, growing up in Colorado, I've actually never been to the Coors facility. And a couple years ago, I was in St. Louis and went to the Budweiser. So it's kind of like Disneyland for breweries, super yeah. fancy. Not that I'm advertising for Anheuser-Busch or anything, obviously, but I had Budweiser off the fermenter there, and I was like blown away that it was like such a pretty cool beer.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Consistency is pretty important in beer, so it's good that they narrowed that down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what was the original plan for the two of you? Obviously, those moments in time, having a Dos Equis or a Leinenkugel, was that the moment in time you're like, oh, I want to open a brewery?
Specific beers really just sparked creativity on us,
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah. I don't think it wasn't quite that direct a trajectory. But I got into home brewing toward the end of college and, was kind of interested in like seasonal food and local food movements and things like that. And so craft beer was kind of adjacent to that. And that was something that, as I got into home brewing, I just went down that rabbit hole and, further and further and further. And I moved to Colorado after college. And so of course the beer scene there really just blew me away. And that then eventually moved to Portland, and that was where I was really hooked and wanted to see if I could take this hobby that I'd had and make a career out of it.
Nice. Natalie, what about yourself?
Mine was a little bit more like happenstance. I had started studying biochem in school, but was also studying art. So I've always kind of been into that like science with an art influence. And when the craft beer industry kind of found me, it seemed like a pretty good fit, and I've enjoyed it so far. So R&D kind of just makes sense.
Awesome. It is kind of like the art of beer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you cut your teeth, Ben? Where did you start? Did you always work at Breakside or?
I've been with Breakside since we opened. Before then, I worked briefly at another brewery here in Portland, awesome brewery called Upright Brewing. They're a small brewery that kind of does wide range of like traditional and eclectic beers. They just updated their website, and I was looking at it the other day, actually, and they just call themselves a no-gimmicks brewery, which I think is refreshing. And so I worked there, learned a lot about how to think about beer there and how to work in a small brewery. And before that, I'd been in brewing school, so I got a diploma as a brewmaster's diploma, master brewer diploma from the Siebel Institute.
Wonderful.
Nice.
Natalie, what about yourself?
I started bartending at a brewery and then got hired on washing kegs and brewing at a brewery that doesn't exist anymore. It was called Burnside. It's one of the main streets in Portland, so it's off of Burnside Street. And was there for a couple years before coming to Breakside.
Cool.
Awesome. When did Breakside start? Sorry, when did you guys open?
We opened in the spring of 2010. So
oh, wow. So
just over 11 years
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
When we opened, there were, I think, 1,500 or maybe 1,800 breweries in the country.
Yeah.
and, now there's 9,000 or 8,500 or something like that. So,
right. How many were in your area when you first opened? Do you remember?
Portland's always had a high. It's hard to how do you count breweries?
Yeah.
Pubs or satellite pubs, things like that. But I mean, Portland has always been known for having just a ton of breweries. I mean, even when we opened, there were probably, 45 operating breweries within the limits. Within that, there's a huge range of sizes from very, very tiny nano operations up to huge industrial breweries.
Yeah. Where do you stand in that spectrum right there from nano to huge industrial size?
Now we're actually, I think, the largest brewery in the city of Portland.
Wow. Nice.
So, yeah. And I should, that's with an asterisk, because our production brewery where Natalie and both are today is in Milwaukee, Oregon, which is the first suburb south. But we do have two breweries in Portland as well. And we're probably the eighth largest brewery in the state now, or seventh, ninth, somewhere in there, producing about 30,000 barrels of beer a year.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you have one or two other locations, is that right, or no?
Yeah, we have two other brew pubs, and we just opened another tap room, and then we have a cool little old Winnebago beer truck type thing that's in a little food cart pod.
That's rad.
Fun.
One of our listeners wants to know, why did you get rid of the generic chair logo?
No, it wasn't generic. They changed it to generic.
Generic chair logo. So it was like a really cool one. And why is it a generic beer chair logo now?
It was a chair. Now it's a swirl. A wave.
It was a chair. Yeah. It was the now it's the Seeker swirly logo. I think in 2017 when we did opened our third brewery, which is our kind of marquee downtown Portland location. We were working with an ad firm at the time who did a lot of interior design for us, and kind of we did a label revamp and kind of a full brand dive basically in terms of artwork and whatnot, because we had never done that before. When the two guys who started the company opened it in 2010, I think the artwork was paid for, that chair logo was paid for, on some crowdsourced website for $300.
Right.
Oh, same with our logo.
So at some point we'd become this brewery that was selling north of 20,000 barrels of beer a year, but hadn't put any money into marketing at all. So we thought it was probably worth putting a little bit in.
Absolutely.
Good answer.
So, when you did that revamp, was that kind of like a stylistic change for you, or was that just purely like a marketing change for the brand?
It was a little bit of he could probably answer a little bit better, but it was more of like a style upgrade, kind of like he said, just to change it up a little bit and have a little bit more uniformity on the shelf, because there was a lot of different brands and you couldn't really tell where the label or like the Breakside name was. And so just a little bit of a style upgrade and, work with some more artists on the labels, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Ben, if you have any more comments on what the the change-up was for?
Well, the critique of the old label was that it was a little bit lonely. Like, it was a single lone chair.
Oh, yeah.
Someone, you know,
like you weren't drinking with someone.
On your own drinking beer.
Oh, I guess drinking alone is frowned
right.
upon.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, I know, right?
But Breakside's kind of like a wave thing, right? Which is like your logo now, so... Maybe
Breakside has to do with actually, disc golf, right?
Oh,
really?
I don't know.
Ultimate frisbee.
Yeah. Ultimate frisbee. I don't even know.
Yeah.
our new label name is our motto is seek and enjoy, and so the seek is that, like, you know, continuous arrow swirling around. So that's where the logo comes from.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not anything specific.
Cool. It all makes sense now.
Yeah. How does a brewery of your size stay relevant in the beer industry where, you know...
Well, we've been around for 10 years.
No, wait. I got a good question,
right? You got this,
right? A lot of breweries that have grown in size aren't always considered cool, quote-unquote cool anymore, right? They lose their allure because their breweries are hard to get into, it's not fun, they're brewing the same core brands, and nothing's really expanding. Are you guys falling into that kind of category, or how do you stay relevant and cool, quote unquote?
We're cool. What? I mean, from my perspective, it's cool to see Ben is like pretty actively involved in a lot of different aspects of the industry, like with the, what's it called, Ben? The Hop Growers Association?
The Hop Quality Group. Yeah.
Hop Quality Group. Yeah, and he works for the guild, and I think that like he's actively involved in a bunch of different aspects of the industry. So constantly having conversations, collaborating with people, and paying attention to what's going on with ingredients. And you know, we have taste panels every single week for our R&D brands and our core brands, and we taste through every single thing. And our R&D brands just kind of like fully dissect the beers. And then with the core brands, we go through the beer at different package dates just to see how beer is aging, if we like hop combinations, and definitely always kind of making the specific beer brand the best that it can, whether that's a little bit of an alter here and there, and moving forward with it, not just having stagnant beers. But, you know, Breakside IPA is Breakside IPA, but there are, you know, different hop... I don't know. We do things to make the brands continue to taste good and not taste like the old version of it, if that kind of answers the question.
That makes sense.
What are your core brands? What are the beers that you are all known for?
We we have probably like, I think, 7 year-round beers right now that we make. Our 2 biggest selling beers are both West Coast IPAs. One is called Breakside IPA. That's has long been our biggest selling brand, our biggest draft brand. It's a Northwest IPA with Citra, Chinook, and Mosaic. So it's a little bit, you know, that beer is definitely kind of, I feel like there's such a negative connotation to the term old school, because it's definitely very a modern IPA, but it uses some classic hops in a way that I think maybe don't get as much love these days. Specifically, Chinook, you know, is a really beautiful hop, and for the most part, I think brewers don't go for it because it has that kind of resinous, piney quality to it. But it really grounds that beer and makes this awesome, like, pine orange tropical blend. And then Wanderlust IPA, which is our biggest selling package beer, is also West Coast IPA. That's very, very light, and is really Mosaic heavy, Mosaic Simcoe heavy. So we're pretty strong in the hop game. Of our other year-round beers, 3 of the other 5 are also IPAs of some sort. And we also make a Pilsner year-round that is traditional German Pilsner that sells really well for us and that people love.
Nice. Love it. Now, on the R&D side, are you focusing on Pilsners right now? Because we see a big shift, Pilsners and lagers, in the industry of people wanting lagers and Pilsners. Or what are you guys working on?
Yeah. So even at the production brewery, there's still a lot of R&D going on. Like, the production brewers will make big batches of Pilsners. So we're canning some different lagers. We have a couple different that are coming through Big Side. And then as far as the pub goes, Starting in 2018, we brewed a lot of lagers, Czech dark lagers, Helles, smoked Helles, different versions of like Märzens, things like that, rote beer, German rote beer. And we definitely continue to brew those because they sell pretty well. The brewery that I run is the original Brigside location. And I always have a handful of lagers going on right there. I have a French Pilsner in tank right now.
Cool.
And yeah, make some hoppy beers. I don't make as many hoppy beers as our other location, the Slab Town one Ben was talking about earlier.
Yeah. I love the diversity of beers. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think going back to that question you asked a couple minutes ago about kind of staying relevant, I think that it wasn't necessarily strategic on our part, but we pretty early on, I mean, we cast a wide net, you know. I think we were on this forefront. Well, one is that we've always positioned ourselves as generalists, you know, like we make and sell a lot of IPA, and in a lot of people's minds have become kind of known for that. But from day one, we've always made a wide, wide range of beers. And so I think that's prevented us from being pigeonholed into being like one, you know, doing one style of beer. And so we've always made lager, lots of lagers. Our Pilsner was our best selling beer for a while in 2013, 2014. And until our IPAs eclipsed it. And then when Natalie joined our team, she really took some of the, you know, we already had a handful of lagers we've been working on, but she really kind of kicked up to the next level in terms of focus on that. But lagers have always sold well for us. It's never been a major challenge. So it's great to see it take off elsewhere too.
Yeah, we're happy about it. So before we get into what the both of you wish, I want to know, is there a beer that you wish you could bring back into the rotation at the brewery that has no longer been brewed for a while? But before we do that, here's a word from our sponsors.
Did you know that your favorite Massachusetts breweries use hops from a local family-owned hop farm right here in Massachusetts?
Our friends over at Four Star Farms are there for you whether you're a commercial brewery or a small batch home brewer.
Make sure to head over to their website today and get your hands on some of the best and freshest hops available locally.
Cheers! Cheers.
At our local homebrew shop, Beer and Wine Hobby, you can get everything you need to make beer, wine, cider, cheese, and more. Not sure where to start? They have knowledgeable staff there to help. Beer and Wine Hobby is family-owned and located in Danvers, Massachusetts. Visit their website, beer-wine.com, and use our promo code BREWROOTS for 10% off your online order today.
Shirts on Tap is the box subscription service for craft beer lovers. Each month, Shirts on Tap partners up with 7 different breweries from across the country and collaborates on a sweet custom shirt design. We've been teamed up with Shirts on Tap since the inception of the podcast and are proud to announce a new promo code for all of our listeners. To get your first shirt for $5 off, go to the link in our description below and use the promo code. And remember, drink better beer, wear better shirts.
And we're back. Was that 15 seconds long enough for you to think about?
Yes. Yeah,
So, what's a beer that you wish would come back into the Brigside portfolio?
What I thought about was that I have a document that I have like my schedule, all sorts of miscellaneous information, all these little tabs, and on the end there's a tab that, what do we call it, Ben? Brigside.
A Deacon Beer Archive or something like that.
Beer Archive, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a list of pretty much any R&D beer that's ever been made at Brigside in general or just at Deacon and the location that I run. And they are categorized from active, kind of needs a revisit, to retired. And when I'm writing my schedule, I get to look through those and dig through them all the time. So basically, Ben lets me go through and make any beer from there or anything else that I want. So
Nice.
I get to make all the fun stuff all of the time.
That's awesome.
Tomorrow, I guess in 2 days, I'm going to brew a beer that I've actually never had that he made a couple years ago. It's like a spelt saison or Belgian beer with fennel. So
Ghetto.
I've never had it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I got to dig it up and remake it.
That's cool. I only ever had a fennel beer before.
Now, are you going to be using fennel seed or fennel extract or whole fennel?
Fennel seed and fennel, what is it, powder?
Pollen.
Oh, holy cow. That's cool.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
Stuff's really powerful. Very intense ingredient.
It's like a little sprinkle of it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So is there a retired beer that you want to bring back that you just haven't yet?
I don't think so, because sometimes it will be a beer that we've done before and we liked. Like, anytime that we're making a new recipe or revisiting an old recipe, it's pretty cool the way that we collect information, because I can just dig through old brew logs or old notes on from our tasting panels. And like, maybe I want to make a pear beer that's a different base beer than something that we made before, but it's the way that we collect data, it's really easy to see, you know, where we bought the pears from, when we added it, how much we added, what flavors we got, and then maybe notes on how we'd like to alter it. And so I can kind of use the information from the pear and then decide what kind of beer I want to add it to. So I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know if this is a direct beer, but it's a lot of times I use the information from past beers to make new beers or make an old one a little bit better or something like that.
Yeah.
Ben, do you have any old beers you want to remake?
You know, I think nothing, like, we're lucky that we have the platforms we do, because like, this original brewery is small enough that we can pretty much make, like, even if a beer is not popular, we can still make it there.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that's one thing that is, we've had beers that started as pub beers, and then we were, because the market changed and there was some interest in them, we were able to brew them as like a 30 or 60 barrel batch, and then, you know, taste shift again, and they kind of scale back down toward the pub side. But there's not any beer that I can immediately think of that's like completely gone and retired and done, that we haven't done in a while, you know, that I really, really miss. And sometimes there's like seasonal ingredients, like really specific seasonal ingredients that we'll use for an experimental beer, where that window is so small that if we miss it, it's just, we just don't get to do it.
Like until the following year.
Yeah. Until the next year, you know, so we make a tomato beer, a Sun Gold tomato beer, usually once a year. But last year with COVID and fires and hop harvest, it was just, we just didn't get to it. And Sun Gold season escaped us. So I think that's on the schedule right now for later this summer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that'll have been 2 years that we wouldn't have had that beer.
Yeah. Do you find yourself not struggling, but, you know, getting impacted by local agriculture? You guys have
forest fires,
different climates. Does that ever impact, like you said, impacted one beer, but does it ever impact your core brands?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, everything from hop selection, supply chain disruption, you know, it's going to change how much beer we can make, because there's a huge human impact to that too. We try and put safety first, you know, always. And that means that when, you know, you're only 6 miles from the fire and the AQI outside is north of 500, you can't run a business. I mean, that's just not how...
That's just not how it works.
Internet.
Yeah, last year with the wildfires, we were really, like you said, very, very close to one of the biggest ones. And it was crazy. We couldn't work. It was hot and it was super smoky, and, you know, cut back production for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, we get impacted by snow, right? But we only might get impacted for a couple of days. But
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting to see how different regions have to struggle with different, you know, problems. Speaking of the brewing industry as a whole, we're seeing crazy and crazier beers every day. Do you guys kind of sometimes try to chase that hype, or do you ignore the hype on some of them until they're, you know, legit?
I think two different things. I think that, you know, it's really important to taste other people's beer and see what they're making. And even if it's not a style that you particularly like, or like that you don't really like the way it tastes. I think there's so many things to learn about it, you know, especially when like hazy beers started coming out a handful of years ago. When you start having ones that taste really good and you figure out the yeast hop interaction, that's really cool. And then can kind of like spin your brewery's style on what other people are making. And some fads are fun to skip. but Ben, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I'm of two minds about it. I mean, I think it's really important to be open-minded and experimental and do new things. And also, you know, like I said, we're not a pigeonholed brewery in terms of what we do. So I think if we wanted to turn around and start making, you know, smoothie sours tomorrow, no one would say, well, Breakside, they're such purists, they can't do that, you know, or like they don't know how to do that. At the same time, that's just not really the sort of beer that we don't have to chase every trend, yeah. You know, brewed IPA, cold IPA, smoothie sour, you know,
seltzers, oat
cream IPA, whatever, like, you know, that's, some of those are fine. I certainly don't begrudge anyone how they make their money in the beer industry. And we are in a lot of ways a brewer driven brewery. And so we choose styles that we think are interesting and that we can deliver really delicious in the glass. And to me, there's not a lot of challenge in just dumping 50% of fruit puree into a, you know, 10% beer to make a 5% beer. But like, yeah, so we just don't do that because I don't find that interesting.
Awesome answer.
So we do enough. Like using yeah. fruit, you know, so we make a yeah. lot of fruit beers. We just have a completely different approach. Or for right now, we like fruit beers, just a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think the Northwest is a more mature market in some ways, just because craft is such a huge part of the beer scene here, you know, like
yeah.
in Portland, it's not just about the number of breweries, right? And I've said this for years that it's like, it's the fact that you go into, we call them plaid pantry. It's like the 7-Eleven or, you know, corner store, package store around here. And like they have 3-4 refrigerators full of craft beer.
That's awesome.
Locally brewed, you know,
yeah.
and there's huge, huge beer sections that I just think having lived on the East Coast and even having lived in Colorado, you just don't see elsewhere. Like having a beer, you say you're going to go have a beer. Like that means craft beer in yeah. the Northwest. And because of that, I think some of these trends are just they sort of roll off the industry's back a little more here than they do elsewhere in the country. Our hazy IPA, which we make year round and we're very proud of. And that's like our 7th best selling beer.
I was going to ask, you know, yeah. how popular are like East Coast IPAs there? New England IPAs.
At our Slabtown location, we try to kind of balance the menu out, you know, have some West Coast IPAs and have a hazy beer on. And like Ben said, we package our beers called What Rough Beast to make that. A couple other hazies here and there, especially when we're trying to, we have some new fun hops to use. But yeah, we do really well with clear West Coast beer too.
I can definitely appreciate that because I think we see a lot of breweries that are new, that are trying to catch, you know, and you can't begrudge them for wanting to make it in the industry. But we see a lot of breweries where 7 of their 8 beers on tap are New England style IPAs. And I think people in our area are getting tired of it because we are seeing some of those classic styles coming back. I mean, I saw a British Bitter at a brewery the other day. And I was like,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I just made an ESB.
Oh, you did? Yes. Nice.
An awesome British Bitter on right now.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
That is yeah. awesome.
But are you seeing... I like to think that we see things come west to east a lot, whether it's food, whether it's music, whether it's beer at this point. What's super popular on the West Coast right now?
West Coast IPA.
That's it.
I was about to say, isn't it? Yeah. Just.
I'd be lying if I said anything else than that. You know, that makes up 70% of what we sell, if not more. And I think that, yeah, more new hops, fun, exciting hops, and the fact that we can have as many different IPAs as we do that are all different and that our customers kind of gravitate towards for different occasions and reasons because we try and intentionally differentiate them flavor-wise as well. Like we're not kind of just doing like a single palette where we just maybe do a little sprinkle of a different hop in this one versus the next one. The beers are really different in terms of alcohol, in terms of bitterness, dryness, etc., and then of course hop aroma. But yeah, I don't think there's anything that I can think of offhand that's like this kind of rising trend here that you guys wouldn't see out east at this point. I mean, I think we live in a pretty globalized craft industry. I mean, Natalie, can you think of anything you're seeing around here?
So you're not going to say German Rauch beer? That's too bad.
I was actually going to say I've seen some people make some more smoked beers. But I don't know. I definitely see people like making up styles a little bit more, which I think is fun, you know, because it's not necessarily made for like a beer competition, but it's like the first time that I made the French pils, I was like, Ben, let's make a French pils. And he's like, what does that mean to you? And I was like, oh, it's kind of rustic. Yeah. And I wasn't really like using French ingredients because we hadn't had, it was sort of hard to get French hops. This is about a year or two ago. And now their hop suppliers are importing more French hops. So I'm using like a Belgian Pilsner malt. And then now there's French hops in it. And so, and then I've seen other people make French Pilsners. And I was like, oh, well, I guess that's a thing.
Yeah. And, see, our,
now we're kind of doing it a little more.
Right, our French Pilsner is Italian Pilsners right now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
French pilsners are less friendly versions of Italian. I'll throw maybe a headier answer in there that I've had a second to think about it too, which is that like I do think that one thing that you're seeing from a brewery design point of view, and I think this does ultimately impact flavors. So sorry, I'm going to go for the nerdy answer on this.
Cool, we love it.
I think that for the first 25 years of kind of the craft beer movement. Most breweries were designed with kind of an English pub style approach, right? So two vessel systems for small craft breweries, maybe you added a whirlpool, but there was not a lot of attention paid to like kind of mash lauter in terms of step mashing. And if you did, you were making kind of, you were kind of a brewery that was going to be doing lagers, right? The only breweries who cared to buy a four vessel system would be very large regional breweries or people who were going to be these kind of quirky holdout lager brewers, you know, that refused to make IPA. I think more and more you're seeing that Germanification of brew houses being used by American brewers to make hoppy beers as well. And so I think, I don't know what the like longer term impact of that's going to be in terms of flavor or style development, but I think that as people move away from English inspired brew houses toward German inspired brew houses and cellars, that there will be some innovation in terms of carbonation techniques, step mashing techniques, flavor development from the hot side into American IPA, and the use of lager techniques in kind of the application of, or just the kind of the greater use of lagering techniques or German techniques, I should say, in the production of American ales. And I think that'll be an interesting trend to see as people keep building new breweries, because I think more people will build breweries like that.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Yeah.
That sounds
really good. I've definitely seen a lot more like horizontal lagering tanks around to like add to that and more people decocting and
we've definitely seen a lot more horizontals out our way as well.
Yeah, we're even seeing like open fermentation for lagers and everything, so which is really cool.
Yeah.
Scary but really cool. So do you feel as though the beer industry is at a good place right now, or do you feel as though there's a lot more room for improvement? Obviously we know there's a ton of issues in the beer industry, but what do you think of the beer industry as a whole right now?
I think it's hard to treat it as there's no simple answer to that. Of course, you know, is that as an industry that is disproportionately male, disproportionately white, disproportionately accessible to the affluent, I think there's a lot of just equity questions that are kind of built into our industry that we have to reckon with. I mean, maybe not as much as like yachting, but certainly more than a lot of other industries where equity has been at the forefront. I think that narrative, you know, there was this great article earlier this year, and I can't remember where I read it. I think it was on Good Beer Hunting, but it was about how kind of the myth of craft beer, this kind of scrappy, rebellious, rogue version of craft beer identity, really no longer fits when you look at an industry that has been as successful as we've been.
Ben and I have had so many conversations based around that, especially the equity. From my perspective, as a white female, I had like a slightly different start to the industry where when I started brewing, I had... there weren't very many other female brewers that I knew of. And there were a handful of people in Portland, like Portland specifically, like four female brewers that I knew of. And then, you know, within the state a little bit more. And then it was kind of interesting because we knew like a lot of the female brewers all knew each other because there weren't that many. And it's pretty cool. You know, I've been brewing for about 7 years, and at this point, there's so many more women in the industry, whether that's brewing, sales, lab, QA, packaging, cellaring. It's pretty cool to see more women involved. And I have, you know, my previous job was a little bit different, but working at Breakside, I feel very privileged because I have a safe, great work environment. And there's so many things to say about it, but the beer industry in general, there, you know, whether we're at competitions or events, it's so much different than my workplace. And I feel for so many women who don't have a safe workplace and have unsafe environments outside in those other places. And I'm not really giving a direct answer, mostly because it's just like such a big question and is so hard. And
yeah.
I do really look to our peers to, I'm trying to choose my words and I don't really know where I want to go with it. But the question that you didn't ask is, right now, with all that's going on with equity in our industry, I feel it's difficult because so many people are asking women what we want people to do to help fix these problems. And I'm like a little bit tired of being asked that. And I'm a little bit tired of people being surprised that there's a problem. And I would really like people to figure out ways to step up instead of asking women to get together and figure out a way to solve the problem, because I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't want to say it's not our problem to solve, but it isn't our problem to solve.
Right.
And again, this is my perspective from, you know, being a white female. So there's so many other struggles that I could never even understand and have never experienced. But I think it's really important for people to stand up and say something when they see inappropriate behavior, and hold people accountable and have a zero tolerance policy for shitty situations that women are put in all the time. Again, not the full,
of course,
the question that that you asked, but,
and I think it's fair to say that those same, you know, that same message goes for any industry, right? I mean, it's not just beer and, you know, any industry, you know, if you see something, you should speak up.
For sure.
Yeah.
So we do have to take a quick break with our sponsors. So thank you for answering that. That's a difficult question.
It's the only one, I promise.
Yeah, it's our only one we promise. But
we can talk about the hard stuff.
Yeah. But we have a word from our amazing sponsors.
Take it away, sound guy.
Are you a solo artist, band, podcaster, or anyone else who needs recording services?
Well, we got a place for you where your vision can become a reality.
Welcome to Small Pond Studios, built by hand with heart and sweat equity by musicians for musicians.
Go to smallpondstudios.io to reach out to get more information. And make sure you let them know that Brute sent you.
Hey, sound guy Ryan here. Didn't know if you heard, but we're a part of the Hopped Up Network. There you'll find other informative podcasts about beer. So go ahead, follow them on social media, and visit them on their website, hoppedupnetwork.com, to learn more about the people, beer, and breweries from around the country. And until next time, thanks for listening. Cheers.
And we're back.
We're back.
Dun, dun, dun. Cool. Well, I'm just going to jump right into it. What do you think has made the Oregon craft beer scene so strong and popular over the years? Is it just the West Coast IPA, or there's got to be more to it than that?
It has to be.
What's the secret?
I think that the fact that Oregon legalized brew pubs in what, like in 1985 or 1984 was such a groundbreaking piece of legislation in ways that people didn't foresee, like what it did for seeding a craft beer industry. I mean, I think you can literally trace almost all the influence back to that. And, you know, the things that the way in which the scene has exploded elsewhere, including on the East Coast, I think it's no different than what we see here. It's not like the water's different or the fact that we're closer to the hop fields, you know, makes that much of a difference. Like, it's not like people come and say, oh, I want an IPA because the hop fields are nearby. They wanted a space to drink beer and got behind local producers just maybe a little earlier than others did. And I think you can trace it back to some just really powerful and forward-thinking legislation from the 80s. That's kind of a lame sauce answer, but I think it's historically probably kind of accurate.
Yeah.
No, definitely. That works.
Yeah. I'm always curious with breweries that are close to hop fields. Are wet hops really worth the hype, or is that just a gimmick? Do you prefer wet hopping versus dry hopping?
That's a great question. Natalie?
That was such a cop out. I love it.
I think there's a couple different sides of it. Regardless of whether or not the beers are exquisite sometimes, I think that the season of it is really exciting because you transition from, you know, summer beers into fresh hot beers, and you go around town and any brewery that you go to, any bar that you go to, people walk in and they're like, do you have a fresh hot beer? And if people are visiting, you're like, well, you know, we'll go drink some fresh hot beers. And there's all sorts of different techniques to make the beer, you know, make the fresh hops taste different ways. But it's just the season of it that's really fun. And then kind of transitions from fresh hop season into, you know, Oktoberfest beers. So it's just a fun part of the year. But and I think just like being a brewer, the magic of waking up early and driving out to the hop field and picking up the fresh hops and seeing the vines and just like walking through where they, you know, you can see the trucks pull up with the hop vines, put them on the arm and shake them off the vine. It's just cool and pretty and fun and just touching hops. I don't know. It's just
the whole thing.
It's experience.
Yeah. I know for sure.
Whole experience. And some of the beers taste really great for like a little bit, and then they just fall off way quicker, you know.
Yeah.
But
that's cool. Kind of along that lines, I always wonder: do you guys prefer like whole cone hops, or do you guys just use pellet hops? Thoughts
in
your regular beers, yeah.
There's all sorts of different mediums you can get hops in now, but we mostly use pellets and some. Hop extract oils or whatever you call them.
Hops can change from years to years. So does that impact how you're brewing and what you're adding to the beers, or do you have hop selection that you select the hops and you know that it's going to be your Simcoe is going to be the same Simcoe that you had last year?
It's never the same Simcoe, but we select our hops. I mean, I'll be a champion for contracting and selecting hops. I mean, I think that as a brewer, if you want to have any say at the table with hop growers and brokers about how to influence our industry, you have to be contracting your hops. Otherwise, you are just simply, a boat out in the sea waiting to find land that might be okay for you. That said, I mean, beer is agricultural. You know, there's been this tremendous effort in to divorce beer from agriculture. I don't know why that there's this perception that, you know, consistency matters, and that even in selection that we would look for the same hops year after year. It's impossible. I mean, it's no different than selecting grapes as a winemaker would, or going to the farmer's market and seeing what lettuces are up this week and adapting your, you know, farm to table restaurant menu for that. And of course we're doing it on a different scale. It's somewhere between industrial and agricultural, you know? And we spend a lot of time when we get in our new hot lops, sorry, our hop lots at the start of each year, brewing with those and trying to figure out how to best adapt our beers to make them taste the way we want them to. But there's all these subtle changes. We have, for example, this year, we have two lots of Citra. We work with two different suppliers on Citra, purchasing Citra. And one is an Oregon-grown lot. The other is a Washington-grown lot. And they couldn't be more different. I mean, they're almost, they are only really the same in name only and varietal only. And, one is like super mango papaya and like really smooth and has this kind of cool resin note to it that we don't typically get in our Citra. And the other is this like kind of catty, grungy, high orange floral thing. That's and crazy. So
it reminds me of lemon verbena.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's only now, right? Almost August that we've kind of got enough data to really understand how to best use both of those. And guess what happens next month?
They're different.
Oh my God.
Oh, jeez. That's crazy that you get so much of a change, even though they're on the same coast, same kind of area. You know, you still get that huge difference. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think a lot of people just, you know, and again, it's, you know, who really spends all their time thinking about like hop terroir, but you have one region up in Yakima that's higher elevation, arid on the dry side of the mountains, and then you have the Willamette Valley, which is in basically a is cooler, more temperate. Yeah, and the character of each is just really different.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool.
See, people, it's not just adding hops to a beer. There's like there is
so
agriculture.
Much more to it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So we want people to ultimately go to Oregon, Portland, and explore the area. I think it's very easy sell for our listeners to go to Portland, but the beer is amazing there.
Come visit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we want people to go and also explore some of like the local places. And when I go to a place, I always like to talk to the people and figure out like what's the best place to go to a burger, what's the best dive bar, and where's the best sushi. So
sushi.
Yeah, I like sushi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So let us know.
Ben is your food man. That's one of his favorite things. So
are we best burger, best sushi, and best
dive bar.
Dive bar. Well, I'm not. I my dive bar days sadly are behind me. I wish I could go to dive bars still. But
I feel like the beer industry in Portland collectively will vote for Reel 'Em In as the dive bar.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah, okay. That's probably true.
Noted.
That's a cool dive bar that makes like fried chicken and JoJo's.
Oh, JoJo's. Those are like the thinly cut French fries, right? And they are seasoned? No?
JoJo's are like a potato quartered and then fried. So it's like those little like...
wedges?
Nice.
Like an orange slice of a potato.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Mm-hmm. And they're fried together. So the potatoes sort of taste like fried chicken.
That's awesome.
Yes. Sign me up.
I think it mostly tastes like fried chicken oil.
Yeah. Delicious. Like,
okay, whatever, I'm in.
Yeah. Sign me up.
Great burger here in Portland. I highly recommend a spot called Bless Your Heart. It's
Bless Your Heart.
There's a couple locations. We do a smash burger. Really excellent. That's near the top of the list for me. Sadly, the place that made my favorite burger in town closed pre-pandemic, actually. So it was not a victim of the pandemic, but Trifecta Tavern. Trifecta. If that burger ever comes back, I know where I'll be.
And sushi.
That's a harder one. Yeah.
Well, what then? Maybe not sushi. How about the best like overall experience to experience Portland and food wise?
I'm gonna go from sushi to oysters.
Ooh.
And you could go to Jacqueline's.
Yeah, Jacqueline's. It's a great time.
All right.
Got some like sparkling wine and they do oyster happy hour.
Ryan's shaking his head. He owns a fish market. He's like, they have the best oysters out here. So we'll have to find out, Ryan. We'll just have to find out when we go.
Yeah, we'll go and find out.
We'll go and find out.
Oh, maybe sacrilege for me to say, I actually do. I prefer East Coast oysters to West Coast oysters.
I've never had East Coast oysters.
Interesting.
So maybe I'll come visit.
Come visit.
There you go. We'll train.
Yeah. Yeah.
That cold water you guys got up there. It's, we're a little too warm. It's too fruity for the oysters here.
Great. Very good. Cool.
That's funny.
Can we shout out some other breweries, though?
Yeah.
Please do.
Yeah.
Like,
our friend spot. So I mentioned I'll make another push for our friends over at Upright Brewing, probably a brewery that a lot of listeners will never have heard of just because they're tiny. I mean, they make, you know, a couple hundred barrels of beer a year, but it's exquisite. It's like truly magnificent beer.
Oh my God, I love that.
They also just changed their tap room. It's now like upstairs in this building, and it used to be, it almost felt like a speakeasy because you had to like know, you walked into this building, there's no signs, and you have to pick the right door. And then you walked, once you find the right door, you walk downstairs, and then you have to get the correct next door. And then you walk into this like basement.
You give a code.
You know, it's like a, maybe, or you just have to know where like the spoon is with the key on it. But it was this beautiful brewery where you could see, they had like a glassed-in room with an open fermentation. So you could kind of like look in there, and you're all around like barrels and tanks. And it was a really like beautiful, special space. And the upstairs is also beautiful and special, but way more accessible. And all their beers are beautiful.
Love it.
Love it.
Yeah, shout out some more.
And then, a couple other friends of ours who make fantastic beer. And there's a lot of fantastic beer in Portland, but over at Von Ebert, Sam Pecoraro and the whole crew there make world-class beer. Sam and Natalie are besties. Sam brewed Breakside briefly. They
make hired
awesome
me at Burnside.
IPA, awesome lager. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're making some killer beer. Just up the street from us here, actually, kind of on the south side of town, another small brewery that a lot of folks won't have heard of is called Ruse Brewing. And they make some really nice, they do some saisons, they do some nice lagers, a lot of West Coast IPA. They also make some of the best hazy IPA in town. So if you want to jam on that, that's definitely their. They don't get the hype that some of the like haze heavy breweries do, I think, elsewhere in the country. Yeah. But they are they're at that level. They make awesome hazy beer and a lot of other non hazy beer that's excellent.
Well,
awesome!
You sold me for the secret. You sold me just with a secret brewery, so we're gonna have to go there.
Definitely.
So
not a great business strategy, but
there's a few like that around our way too. Listen, so we are well aware of how this works.
Aren't escape rooms like really popular right now?
So, right?
Like, if they just modeled that into an escape room too, it would be perfect.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you for doing this episode today. Importantly, we want people to come to your brewery. Where are you physically located at your multiple locations, and where can our listeners find you on the internet?
I actually have the Decom address memorized because I always have to look it up. But we have one location in Northeast Portland. We have a location in Northwest Portland. And then we have the Milwaukee suburb production brewery. That's just like a little tap room. The other two spots have food also, but Milwaukee is just beer.
Cool.
Do you want addresses? What you want?
People can use Yelp and Google and their iPhone to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say it and then they'll just instantly forget.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
No one's
820
like
Northeast Seacom.
Yeah.
Writing it down right now. Like, no, North.
Oh my God, wait, where is it?
Yeah. And you guys are
maybe
on.
Maybe my dad. He'd be like, do you know where you're going in that car? Yeah. How are we going to get there?
Which interstate are you off of? Yeah. And where are you guys located on social media? Kind of the same thing, but.
You can find us at Breakside Brews.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's our Twitter. That's our Instagram. Our website is breakside.com.
Cool.
Facebook, of course.
TikTok?
I think we actually do some TikTok.
Oh,
we're
my.
I'm not a TikToker.
I'll have to look.
Oh, dang.
Just wait till your brewery, you start getting in TikToks and all that stuff. We have friends that work at breweries and like, oh, I was on a TikTok today. Didn't know about it. You don't know. Maybe you have
like
and you don't know.
Millennial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an elder millennial, so I don't know how to work it.
Yeah, just
exactly.
I know how to scroll and laugh.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Same.
Yeah, same.
Cool.
And you can also find our beer. We're you know, a regional brewery, but and 90% of the beer that we make is sold basically between Seattle and Eugene, Oregon. Seattle, Washington, Eugene, Oregon. But if you're in Washington, Oregon, very easy to find our beer. We also sell beer in Idaho, Colorado, Montana, a little bit in British Columbia, a little bit in Alberta,
ooh,
a little bit in Northern California. So you can anywhere in the Mountain West, you can pretty much find a way to find our beer.
Awesome.
Cool. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. But also, I'm going to end it with Ryan's question.
Oh, yeah.
I love that
question. Yeah.
Yeah. We like to ask sometimes, what do you want to learn more about? And that's as open-ended as you'd like.
That is good.
Ooh. So many things.
Stumped him.
Ben?
I don't have a good answer to this offhand. I mean, nothing that I really care to share in this forum necessarily.
Oh. Okay.
I'll squared on beer, and for us, we're very much maxed at this kind of current location and set of locations that we're at. And if we're going to continue to grow and be able to provide our team of brewers professional development and growth opportunities and careers that they can live with through their 30s, 40s, 50s, hopefully. We're an employee-owned company. We've done a lot of things to try and cultivate tenure and cultivate kind of seniority for folks and want to keep in retention. But we're going to have to build a new brewery, and it's going to have to be a bigger brewery. And, you know, how to do that smartly and not make the same mistakes that other breweries have made, and how to manage production in a way that's both humane and efficient operationally, and kind of allows us to treat people as well as we can, but also make the best beer we can and make the most of it we can efficiently to try and like nail that. That's going to be that's the challenge I look forward to in the next handful of years. And I don't think it's learning a particular thing, but it's like a lot of little decisions and planning that will go into trying to make that happen so that we can be the company that I think we aspire to be.
Cool.
Mine's like a little bit more personal, but I feel like when I first started working in R&D, I was like hyper focused on, I was just reading a lot about like how other industries define R&D, and a lot of it is anticipating problems and figuring out how to set your company up so that you're good to go when those problems arise. And I think the beer industry is so different because, kind of like we were talking about earlier, it's when we're writing new recipes or revisiting old beers or figuring out ways to be innovative and staying hip with what's going on, it's so like boots on the ground. Everything's sort of happening now. And when you're not really anticipating problems, you're like deep diving and getting like more and more nerdy about beer. Like a couple years ago when people were first starting to like fully understand hop creep, I think that's like R&D, but it's not necessarily anticipating. It's you see a problem and then dig that, you know, deep dive into it and work with hop companies or whatever it is. And I think it's really interesting working with other industries, whether it's other food production industries, like how they use certain ingredients or distilleries or whatever it is. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's really cool that we are R&D and our innovation is completely different, where we're kind of, you know, learning as we go and deep diving once we see problems arise or we find new ingredients or we have little ideas. So it's definitely like more innovation than it is research in the other way. But yeah, I personally really enjoy, you know, learning and deep diving as we go.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Great answers.
Natalie and Ben, thank you for taking some time out of your day to do this. I hope you guys get to enjoy some of the weather outside. It looks nice out there. And enjoy the rest of your summer before you get a busy wet hop season and then crazy Oktoberfest and
everything else.
There's no really lull season for you. But
nope.
But
it gets a little rainy, but it's otherwise a pretty nice year round here.
Yeah.
So love it.
Thank you all for having us. It's been a pleasure to chat.
Yeah. We can't wait to come out there and hang.
Yeah.
Please do.
And I will say another thing. It's been pretty cool listening to other folks that you guys have talked to and people that I know in the industry, and also just kind of like, you know, we have conversations over beers, but like specifically I was listening to Megan Parisi and I didn't know that she was a musician.
Yeah, she's a clarinetist. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. So
U.S. Naval Band, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool to hear you guys have conversations with other folks.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Megan's awesome.
Yeah.
I just have to, anytime I can give her a shout out.
Yeah.
It's easy to.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Cool. Well.
Awesome.
Everyone, make sure you make it out to Portland, Oregon. Check out Breakside Brewing.
And all their friends.
All their friends. And
cheers.
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 All right, I got challenged to do the outro in one breath, so this might be a little difficult, but we're going to try it. All right, so Ryan, next week we have our friends.
Stellwagen.
All right, we did it. Enjoy. It comes out next Friday.
Cheers. Cheers.